Welcome, everybody. Good to see Andy, Siki. How you guys
Hey,
doing?
welcome, welcome. How are
Yeah.
you?
I'm doing good, surviving and thriving at the same time as a founder does. Some days you think your world is crumbling, and then the other days you're on top of the fucking world, and you're like, this is gonna be a billion-dollar a public company, and the other days you just want to crawl up into a ball. And I'm sure that a lot of our listeners feel the same way.
Do you ever
And
read
think
the Jessica Livingston book, Founders at Work?
Yes.
I have
Got
not
a
actually.
quote in the book. I think she interviewed the Hotmail founders, and I think their definition of a startup was one day you think you're going to take over the world, the next day you think you're dying, and nothing has changed in the 24 hours in between.
No, that's the crazy
Canonical
part.
definition of a startup.
Yeah,
So good.
so all the founders listening, even though that we may seem like we know what we're doing, we feel your pain. But we had a lot. So there's a lot of stuff. We're in the new year. Lots of stuff to talk about. We have a lot of AI stuff on the kind of the for topics, and of course we're going to go off topic. But why don't we? I'd like to start ac actually at. So something that I could speak of, since I haven't gone down the AI rabbit hole as much as you guys can. But why don't we talk about the artifact death? So this was a company that was founded by the Instagram co-founders, Mike and Kevin. And essentially what it was, I don't know if you want to dub it as like TikTok for news or something like that. I tried it as I try out as many products as I can, and initially like completely churned. I'm like, I don't see any difference between like I use Twitter as my main source of news. I've tried Flipbook, I've tried all of these, I've tried all of the stuff, and Twitter just like, I don't know if it's that dopamine rush and you just like continuously go through things. Or I also use like our WhatsApp chat or other WhatsApp chats that would be like, this is like the like have you guys seen this? And like that's like a really big signal for me. So like for me, I initially churned out of it, and I was probably pretty pessimistic initially when they launched it. But there was a lot of hype around it, and now they are shutting it down. What do you guys think on that, especially given their kind of like historic rise, selling to Facebook for $1 billion, which was and it still is a massive amount of money. And Instagram today is like one of the largest social media platforms on in the world. And this was their second go around at it. What do you guys think of what happened there?
I mean, my first feeling is I'm really sad. It is one of the few apps on my home screen.
Were you a power user of it?
I used it, I think that's a good question. I used it maybe once a week, twice a week.
Okay. So they
But
didn't they didn't
enough, I loved it enough to be on my home screen. I think it's they're solving a real problem, which is there is no really great place for me to discover the things I want to read. Medium is just medium. Twitter, sure, you get some links, but the types of things that get attention there are things that are almost attention porn. You
Yeah.
they are viral for a reason, but it's not necessarily stuff that makes me happy to read. And the idea of a TikTok like algorithm and feed for news, I thought it was great. So well implemented. The recommendations got progressively better over the week. So I'm actually quite surprised that this happened. But the more I think about it, the more I respect the founders for doing what they do. I don't know if the first time founder would have done that, but it seems like an exceedingly mature decision.
I think it. I agree with CK. So I think that thesis was, I mean, in China, ByteDance, the parent of TikTok, one of their main products outside of TikTok is algorithmic-based news. And I think that was the thesis. Can we create the U.S. version of that? I think it was a very much a swing for the fences type of bet. I tried it once or twice until I saw your home screen about 2 weeks ago. I didn't remember what Artifact was. So it never built that habit or aha moment for me. But again, like whether or not the product resonated with me, I think it was just a 0-1 swing that they could build the next Instagram. And I think it's a valiant effort. You have to call it what it is. I mean, they built a great product. Maybe they didn't hit PMF. And I think they're pretty mature founders who've arguably created what now has become, I don't know, a top 5 company on the internet, a top 3 company on the internet in itself. So if you're not getting traction, I see the reason to shut it down. It's a very much Facebook or Google way of running a product versus how most people approach a startup. Do you agree with that, Siki?
Yeah, it is. I think the question that I have, though, about the announcement is they said we shut it down because we determined the size of the market wasn't large enough. And
that's all bullshit. It's people weren't using it. That's the real reason.
So I think I would love to get some speculation on, like, what do you think they saw that led them to conclude that? You know, it's a pretty specific thing. It's one thing to say this product that we built isn't yet working. It's not getting the traction that it has. Another thing to say, the size of the market just isn't big enough. How do you distinguish between the two?
I think that's just all PR nonsense. And I think the real thing, we all do this, I've done this before as well, right? You have your PR version and the real stuff that happens underneath the covers. I just look at my own habits and in the fact that we all used it, and even Siki, you using it once a week, that is not the retention that you would, you should be using it every single day. That should be your daily news thing. So I think that they just didn't crack the PMF, which would have been for that product getting your news every single day, and they just never got to that point. I also think that they tried to and maybe this is I'm gonna say it again, Andy, I'm gonna say hype cycle, but the hype cycle of these algorithmic, which it's not the hype cycle anymore, but
I'm trying to figure out what hype cycle you're going towards. I don't think this one is a hype cycle company.
It definitely was at one point. If you think of the algorithmic feeds, which obviously TikTok, and there's so many other social apps that took this on. It was why couldn't this happen for news? And in my opinion, it was just for news, it's there's so few articles that it doesn't make a lot of sense. To me, and I will admit on the show, I'm an avid TikTok user and it's bad for me, but I get a lot of parenting advice from it. And that's that. And my wife sends me parenting advice from these randos. And so I'll concede that it's just this hit of dopamine, and it's this unlimited thing. It's hey, I have nothing to do right now. What am I going to do? But with Artifact, it was it's you're only going to have a few stories a day. And so you don't have that unlimited amount of user generated content. It's people that are, so it honestly, that's what I kind of thought from the beginning. I'm this has been tried also a number of times. But also what I do want to get to is that the second time founder that, and this has probably not happened a lot, but the founder that had, the first time founder that has created and just something that just took the fuck off. And everybody has just said how amazing they are. You can imagine how many yes men or women are around them. It's oh my God, you are the next gods. And I could just imagine both founders, and I've talked to Kevin once, and I don't know Mike at all, and I'm sure they're very smart. But I think that we've created one of the top social networks, and then they're wait, we could do this again, and then we can And it builds this ego in there. All other kind of I definitely would not put Zuck in this position because he realizes that he needs to continue innovating. I'd put Dropbox actually in this position to be like, they had something out of the gates that just fucking took off. And you could see just like the lack of like innovation or just like, just, I don't, maybe it's the cockiness or whatever of the founder to be like, everything I touch goes to gold. And I'll speak from my personal experience because I was that founder at Ship. Like what I initially, and that was my, not my first company, but that was the one that really took off. And then it was just like, holy shit. And then I would be like to product teams, I was like, we need to do this or this. And they're like, this is a stupid idea. Why the fuck? Our customers don't want this. I'm like, you don't know what I created. Like, I created this thing. And like, you just get this, like, this ego that is just like, I am the person to go and create this. And so I'll end it by, if I saw this, and I know there obviously was a lot of great investors that came into this round. I personally, knowing what I know as a founder and getting that like first time, like just like out of the gate, like rocket ship, like powers, I would have not invested in it. And I would have actually evaluated on the merits of the idea. I think that also failure is extremely hard, but extremely humbling. I've taken like from Ship, like we had rocket ship and then it fucking failed. And now I question everything. And I really like talk to customers, make sure that we are finding product market fit. Yes, I'm going to move on. But I think that is, anyways, I'll move on to the next topic, which is going to be Rabbit R1. Andy, go.
SeaGeek, I know you and I have been talking about this a little bit on the WhatsApp group. So what do you think? What will you buy it? Does it work? Is it even possible? Tell our listeners from the beginning what a rabbit is, R1, and then let's talk about a lamb, a large action model, the terminology they coined.
I mean, you know, I'm not really sure I can even describe it. But for some context, last week, I think a company called Rabbit released a 25-minute long Apple-style keynote, uncanny resemblance to the original iPhone keynote. And it's this design, this is hardware device designed by a group called Teenage Engineering, really well-loved cult design hardware agency. And it's a combination of what they're calling a large action model, which instead of predicting tokens, it uses apparently software and is able to take action. Wasn't clear on the details of the technology, but you can find that with a hardware device. It looks like a Game Boy almost. It's a standalone device. It has a touch screen, voice input, some kind of wheel, a camera. And the idea is it's a little standalone ChatGPT in your pocket kind of deal. I'm sure that's underselling it. But a few remarkable things have happened since. I mean, they apparently are selling it in 10,000 batches. There are 4 batches in of selling these things out. So $40,000 for $200 a pop, 40,000 units for $200 a pop. So that's about $8 million in orders so far. And the conversation is, what is this thing and why is it useful? It's not 100% clear to me yet, but I think a remarkable thing that I'm taking away from it is it's a 25-minute long video and apparently 8 million people watch this thing. I watched the whole thing.
Wow.
And the main takeaway for me is with a sufficiently good video and an okay product, people watch the whole thing. It does get me to think about like, what are the ways in which that it is like a completely different unorthodox of launching a brand new product today. And one of my takeaways is production values actually is fairly underrated. Like it was extremely well produced.
Totally agreed.
So let me take this one. So I don't know if you noticed, one of the founders worked at CAA, the talent agency, for a number of years. So you basically had a Hollywood agent as one of the founders. So when you look at their LinkedIn, it's very interesting. That's number one. Number two,
what?
It's Back to the Future. If anyone remembers 2013, 2014, you'd spend $100,000 on a video. This is how Sandwich became the production company du jour of every founder.
Oh, yes. I remember those days.
And these pre-orders.
Oh, yes.
And I did this at Nanit. And then you'd scramble for 6 to 12 months to ship the product. There is the internet is littered with carcasses of companies that never shipped.
Yeah.
I myself had to live in a factory for about half a year to get our product out the door.
Andy, can you remind people like what Nanit is and like just so everybody has more Nanit's context?
Nanit's the leading baby monitor in the market. We track breathing, sleep, and movement. We sell hardware. We sell software. When we launched our pre-order, the hardware was basically done. At the time, the software had a few months to go. Obviously, everything in hardware takes longer than you ever expect. So my sense after raising this company raised 20 to 30 million before launch, I think they're going to be spending a lot of time in a factory and a lot of time building software. I think I got hit up by, 15 different founders asking me what's a great video agency. In this specific version, it was more like a motion graphic agency or an interaction agency because it was very much a founder-led monologue and then a demo of the product in a very Apple-esque keynote. It's shocking that people watch 20 plus minutes of this.
Yes.
I always thought that you have to do this in 90 seconds max, like a Super Bowl commercial.
So,
and they must have spent $200,000 on the video alone.
Oh, yeah. Minimum.
Easy. Like 20 minutes of video. You could spend $150,000 on 90 seconds of that quality.
That 3D rendering, the Apple style, like close up on the hardware alone is like 100K plus. Easy.
Yeah. Somebody hired a great production company to build this video. Uh-huh. Now you got to go build the product. So that's the most interesting part about it. But it's a throwback to 2014, 2015, things that I thought didn't work anymore. And then you get into what is a LAM, a large action model. And I don't think anyone on this call knows, and CK and I spend a good amount of time in AI, and I'd be curious if anyone in OpenAI knows what a LAM is. And then you have to build it. And the features and functionalities they promised are incredible. And I hope they have the best engineers under the sun and they have a working prototype. But the suspicious person in me says, I don't know what's going on here. So the question for everyone on this podcast, Siki, did you buy it?
I did not buy it.
Oh, and you buy every gadget you type of your mind.
Is it cool? I don't know if the utility is there for me.
Yeah.
I think, you know, a lot of people are like me on Twitter for talking about, what do you actually use this thing for? Why is it not an app? And then there's people who are like, they're doing something new and we should celebrate that. It's brand new hardware. It's well designed to take a big swing. And I think both are true. Clearly, there's enough of an interest for people to just spend money on it. I will say this. There is something that I've been noodling over this, you know, whether it's like the Arc internet browser or Rabbit R1 or even Runway in its early days, when we first announced like the first version of the website, people will try things because they're new and with visually marketing
and
you tell a good story. And there's two ways you can look at that, right? One is like, this is all bullshit. And at some level, neither of this is wrong, right? I think they're both absolutely correct perspectives. One is bullshit. The other is narrative really matters a lot in general, right? It actually has real impact and they told a really good story and it gets people to talk to them and people are willing, surprisingly willing to try new things because it's a good story well told.
I agree with you.
Another thing actually, did you guys see the, I may pronounce this wrong, the Humane wearable, the AI wearable?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Sure. Okay.
So he got toasted.
It's the AI group.
Oh, no.
So this is basically like something that you put on. I guess it's like the person demonstrating on CNBC. I remember watching this on CNBC. He put it on his whatever jacket or something like that. And it's basically like a voice activated, like AI, like use. It's conversational. And he got fucking toasted afterwards. And it was, I think it goes back to the same thing that we're kind of talking about is like, what is the main like use case? Like, okay, do we want to have like a basically like a separate device that we're going to put on us to access like basically ChatGPT, which we're going to get to do GPT-5 later on. But like, that's essentially what it's doing. And you'll be able to, instead of having your phone, you'll be able to, you could text people and you could receive texts and people, and it definitely did not go right for them. $700, the price point. They call it an AI pin. He was just getting killed by the panelists on CNBC, and definitely not the case. But also maybe there's also kind of a thirst for like new hardware out there. Like I don't know if that's like the case, or if that's just like AI is just kind of bringing out these new what people would dream into these new use cases and all these different things. And maybe that actually is like I don't think we need to spend more thoughts on that, but maybe that is a nice segue into like the Vision Pro and what your guys' thoughts are on that. Or if you have something else you wanted to mention on what I just said.
I'll take Humane for 1 second, then let's go into Vision Pro. So cool. Humane has every advantage under the sun. It's a team of basically wholly ex-Apple people who were very legitimate folks at Apple. Number two, it has a partnership with OpenAI. Sam, I think, is an investor. They have full access. It's basically powered fully by OpenAI. So I assume it's GPTV and the same stuff that's in the app on the voice technology. So Whisper. And I mean, it is a novel form factor. It's expensive to build and it's an expensive product. We'll see how that goes. I think Rabbit is very interesting because it's not that. It's not like that. No one knows whose technology is under it. They're probably using some type of open source model. They have to build it all themselves, and they didn't have 100 million or 80 million coming into the launch. That being said, I'm tempted to see the reviews and see what they can bring to market. I think myself and the internet loves gadgets. Like, there is a whole segment of us
I
out
agree.
There. Everyone wants it to succeed. And every now and then, a company comes along in the hardware space that is a combination of incredible marketing plus it actually lives up to the value. And if you can do that, like, I think if Rabbit can actually do what they promise and it's a good product, it can be sold. The key here is you have to do it. And I live this with Nanit, and we were able to successfully ship it and deliver the features that we sold people. So I'm very curious to watch this story play out. We'll know, I think, in 6 to 12 months what really happens here. But I want to talk about a Vision Pro.
Yeah.
I know Siki and I are both waking. I'm waking up at 8 a.m. on the East Coast. I assume Siki's waking up at 5 a.m. And we're going to pre-order this thing.
Yeah, 100%. I can't wait.
I don't even know what I'm using. I don't know what the use case is, but I want it. It's an Apple product.
So, okay. is that because it's Apple? Is that you just think it's going to be so good that it's Apple versus all of the other like predecessors before? And it's
yes.
Like, this is Apple. Okay.
100%.
Okay.
What?
That's literally the bet. I don't know what I'm going to use this for. I hope it has I hope it's really cool for flying across the country. I'm hoping I'm going to be able to sit in bed while my wife wants to go to sleep, and I'm going to sit in front of like a 100-inch projector TV, I hope my Zoom calls are going to be amazing. And I hope to wear it during work. I'm really curious, but I don't know what I'm going to use it for. So, Siki, I've been talking a lot. I'm curious to hear your thoughts on this one.
I mean, I'm still thinking about Humane a little bit and connecting to the Vision Pro. Like, why do I want that so badly? The Vision Pro and Humane and Rabbit, not so much. And I think when I'm reflecting on this, like, product gets really, really, really hard. It's sort of my main takeaway here. And there's this belief that, one, you know, it's like the two extremes of thought around product development. One is like, you really talk to your customers a lot, do a lot of research and build something that people want. And then there's this other unorthodox school. So like, you just kind of have to know what it is and use taste and judgment.
Yeah.
And well, I think the truth is usually somewhere between. You need to be good at really both of those things. And you know, in some other context as a founder, whether you're a founder of Rabbit or Humane, you can like get pretty deep on one side. It's like, this is just a cool thing, but you can be disconnected from like actual utility. I think the thing that Apple has done well historically that's given myself and presumably Andy a lot of confidence in whatever you do is like, they do both. Like they are very, very good at both. I know that this is going to be an amazing experience. It's going to be the latest technology, but it's going to be useful.
Or do they actually just kind of like, they're never first to market on anything, right? And they kind of just like take a lot of the learnings from a lot of like the failures and like, I'm sure that they're looking at every single hardware product out there. And the ones that fail, they're like, obviously, we're not going to do that. And then they're just going to be like, we're going to take like our approach. We see that the use cases that actually make sense, and we're going to go and build them for the masses. So,
yeah,
like I think that's, I don't know if you guys think they agree with that same sentiment.
I think that's, I think we're kind of saying the same thing, right?
Yeah.
In that.
Yeah.
In order to build something useful, it's useful to just start with something that people already, you know, want and people already use and make it that much better. And you can take the same approach and invent a brand new kind of hardware with new technologies never existed before, no one has ever used before. And it doesn't necessarily have the same amount of success, I think, at the end of the day, because, you know, what is this, right? That's not what Apple does.
No.
It's a level of difficulty that Apple itself would not necessarily even attempt, right? We've had VR headsets and AR headsets for close to a decade at this point, right? So there's enough information about what people actually use these things for Apple to say, we're going to do that, but way better. And people want it. And I feel like there is a really good lesson for founders there. And we all want to do something new, something that is like an auteur type of made a product. But what? How do you choose?
Yeah.
The market for that, and I think Apple has done it better than anyone.
I think the lesson for founders here, and also if you look back on like a lot of the most successful startups, is like it, like there are a lot of advantages of being first to market, obviously. But I think if you probably like. Maybe we could ask GPT-5 this. But I would think that there's actually more advantages going and doing it. You're the second to third to fourth person to market. One example that kind of like comes out at me is Ramp versus Brex. I'm not sure if you guys, which company you guys use. We use Ramp. Brex. So for everybody that doesn't know, they're credit cards for startups. And Brex came out and they kind of replaced like the corporate MX that you had certain limits and you actually had to like sign your personal guarantee for. When I actually shut down ship, I was actually on the hook for losing all my credit. So I was like, doesn't make sense. So Brex came out with like no personal liability. They came out with cashback rewards, and a number of other things. And then You have Ram come in and they're like, hey, we're going to do the same thing, but we're also going to add like the ability for you to create more fandom cards. They do a ton more features as far as like expense management for the, and they were aimed at like the finance team versus like the founders. And like, Siki, you mentioned you guys use Ramp. We use Ramp as well. And so like sometimes that second time, like that mover advantage, if you know what you're doing, if you know what to actually go to market, you actually can get like that benefit. And that's kind of what we're talking about with Apple here, right? Like Facebook's has been trying to get into the VR world forever. They've obviously Oculus, and they bought them, has been as well. And Apple's like, hey, we know hopefully they know the use cases that actually make sense. And like, we're going to go do that as well. So I think there's much more advantage of going and being the second, third, fourth player in a market, in a big market, and doing it completely different. But I think that the conventional wisdom is that first to market, you're going to get all the market share, and like, you're going to have these massive network effects and everybody's going to buy your shit. And then that just doesn't turn out to be the case, especially I would say in the world that I'm in, B2B world, like nobody gives a shit. Like if you could create something in the consumer space that's maybe cool or something like that, maybe it's a little different, but like that's my learning on that, taking it to like a B2B product like Ramp or
Rex. Apple's so unique, though. So, I mean,
it is.
If Siki, I know so, I'd buy the pin if Apple sold me it in 1 second. I also know it would cost $4.99 because it wouldn't be relying on some kind of Qualcomm Snapdragon processor. It would be some custom chip. I mean, it would probably be like the H1. So let's keep the humane name. And it would cost significantly less. The functionality would be significantly better. And they deliver magic. I mean, that's what Apple's known to do. Even if you think about the watch, I mean, like this, it was at launch the biggest failure they've had in a long time. And their PMM team has repositioned it to focus, outside of being a watch, to focus it on health. And they brought this whole health strategy to market that was something that we weren't even thinking about. I didn't know I wanted pulse ox on my and tracking. Blood oxygen on my wrist. Now I want it. And there is like an inherent, they create markets. They're vertically integrated. They have the distribution and they have the content. And like, when you think about Vision Pro, they have the iTunes store. They have Apple TV. They have movies.
Yeah. Bringing back to like the startup analogy. So people that are listening, nobody here is, our audience is not Tim Cook yet. Hopefully it will be one day. But what other like startup analogies would you kind of use as far as like being second or third in the market, watching like the first person kind of fail and like the second one or third one kind of succeed? I think that people definitely like, everybody wants to come out with like, we were the first, and like VCs will fund that. It's like very unique, but like, can you guys think of any other examples?
I mean, you think as a founder, you have to not believe that. I think it's almost a requirement for you to believe that the first mover is not going to take everything forever.
Yeah.
Like one of the
great point
traits of any founder is extreme optimism, right? That's something that we all have in common, that there is something unreasonably built in the world and we're here to build it, even though there's a million, 10 million people out there trying to compete. But if you look at, you know, the evolution of any industry, I'm trying to build better finance software. This thing has existed for 50 years, almost, right?
Yeah.
50, half a century of people working on things like this. But, you know, people have built new finance software 10 years ago, 20 years ago, and they all been fairly successful. I think that's true of any given domain. And Ramp is like, I would say, and Ramp versus Brex is probably more the norm than the exception. There is always going to be opportunity as time evolves for new ideas, for new platforms, and your job as a founder is to pick correctly and execute well. but fundamentally the belief that this is possible, that you don't have to be first for you to be successful, is almost a requirement, I think, of a good founder.
Well, so Siki, I think what we're all talking about is the why now question. If you think about it from a very standard pitch format. Mm. So when they asked you about Runway, what was the why now? I mean, why did you start finance software in 2022, 2021? I don't know the year.
Yeah, we have 3 slides for this. I could recite them.
But let's hear it.
You know, 3 things has changed, right? One is, if you think about the arc of transparency within organizations, it's only ever increasing. And so for some context, what we're building is trying to make finance more accessible to the team.
That's true.
And you've seen this with Amplitude. You've seen this with Figma. Figma wasn't just a browser tool for a design tool in your browser. It democratized design. It used to be considered impolite to even look over the shoulder of your designer. But now everyone's in there, whether you're a PM or a business person. And that's mm-hmm. changed design fundamentally strategically. There's no such equivalent proper finance. There should be. That's one. The second thing that's changed is this idea of accessibility versus power. So traditionally, if you're building very complex software products, it's very difficult for people to use. Or you can build something that doesn't do a whole lot. It's very easy to pick up. But modern design and engineering through the right abstractions, like the Notions and the Figmas of the world, has proven that it's possible to do both, to push forward that efficient frontier. And the third thing, AI is a real thing now, obligatory AI slide. But the way we connect that is our mission is to make business accessible, understandable to everyone. Mm-hmm. And AI, LLMs are good at precisely those 2 things today, making things more understandable because it can explain things in human language, more accessible because they talk to it. So we say those are the 3 things for why Runway today is possible.
So folks, for anyone listening, that's how you raise $30 million. In a category that's 50 years old.
Can I still invest, Siki? Is the round still open? You've sold me on your vision. I love it.
No, but it's a real, I mean, categories change. Opportunities exist. You can learn from other people's failures. Why now is a real thing. I mean,
it is a real thing.
Why you will succeed in a category that is considered dead. I think everyone saw, maybe people saw this morning, that Drizzly is shutting down. And I'm personally devastated.
Really?
That's how I get my tequila delivered once every couple weeks. And I think Uber realized it's just a hard business and logistics is hard and they couldn't make it work. What I don't understand is why it's much harder than Uber Eats. I think it's because liquor laws are state by state. But I mean, I'm sure somebody here is listening and thinking, I can do a better liquor delivery company. I mean, liquor is this, liquor and spirits and wine and beer is a massive market in the US. And maybe there is some innate knowledge that somebody has, and maybe it's AI driven in your route optimization that will enable you to have cheaper liquor delivery.
As the logistics person on this panel, the reason is literally the number of deliveries you could do per person per hour. And so if you can combine that with like DoorDash or Uber Eats, like if you look now on your app, it's like, hey, you're getting you're buying food from somewhere else. Like, do you want to add like a thing of whatever your favorite tequila is, Andy? Like it's rooted in just like the actual economics of that, and it's not anything else than just economies of scale there.
So go ahead, you can still get alcohol by Uber Eats today and before. Drizzly was actually a different thing. So for the context, I used to run growth at Postmates, so little bit of insight here. Drizzly,
right.
Not actually using the Uber network. Drizzly uses what enabled liquor stores to use their own delivery drivers. And so it's kind of a completely different infrastructure play than Uber Eats itself. And I think it just became a distraction.
Ah, interesting. So Drizzly is the old Seamless model that we work, where they would deliver it themselves versus actually on-demand carriers.
Seamless for home.
Yeah,
that's why I shut down.
That I was not aware. And so I can still get my alcohol on Uber Eats. I just can't seem to go to Well, I'm happy. I'm saved. Thank you, Siki. That was worrying me all morning that I would actually have to walk a block to the liquor store.
Anyways, okay, let's move on here. So we had one other thing, I guess, some like marketing wisdom war stories that we had on the docket here. I don't know. I think, see, you added this here. If you want to like maybe start this off, I'm definitely happy. I have my own as well. But for the listeners, what do you kind of take? What are some war stories?
I'm actually curious about hearing. I didn't know, Andy, that you were behind Nanit. I should have known that, but I remember having my first child and seeing that. I'm like, we need that. We need that so badly. So we'll love to hear more about how that launch went. I can share more about the runway too.
Yeah, no. So, I mean, that launch is the Rabbit R1. Put up a great video, but we were smart about it, I'd say. We had watched a lot of the other pre-order launches and Kickstarters and Indiegogos at the time. And we said we weren't going to launch prior to 3 months of being able to actually deliver the product. So we were starting to build inventory already. We probably had some time to go on the hardware. I think we thought we were 3 to 6 months away from shipping the hardware. We ended up missing that deadline by, I don't know, like 4 months, hardware is hard. There's a reason. I mean, there's a lot. For folks who don't know, you go through a bunch of different validation tests, EVT, DVT, and PVT. And so PVT is when you can basically say, we're going to ship this thing. It's mostly been validated. We could build it. And then after that, we still ran into challenges manufacturing it. On top of this, we had early working software, but we hadn't finalized our computer vision. So it was basically from the time we sold out our launch batch, all hands on deck, 24/7. I slept in a factory in Texas, did exactly what Elon Musk was doing, and watched people build this.
Did you have a cot? Where did you actually sleep?
We slept at like a motel next door.
Okay.
You
were not in the factory then.
Right. No, I mean, it was literally a motel, like maybe a stone's throw across the street. It just happened to be there.
Giving you a hard time.
Yeah, no, you can't sleep in Flextronics factory. You can sleep when you have your own factory. They kick you out at a certain time. And so I spent all week there every week until I think it was like someday in December when the first product rolled off the line. And then we shipped it and we scaled it. And thankfully, we were right about product market fit. We were actually able to deliver what we promised, and the tech worked. And the product got better and better as the time went on. But it was one of these video stories where, okay, we're 85% baked, and now we have to go ship it. And we got lucky. We persevered. And I assume the Rabbit R1 folks are sitting there thinking, oh my God, do we have a contract manufacturer lined up? What is this large action model we sold people? And how are we going to build it? And can we build it on GPT-V plus some maybe ChatGPT plus some OpenAI GPT-4 models? That's long-winded. That's the craziest thing I've ever done for marketing. What I've said to everyone else who's pinged me this week about video marketing, do not do this until you're ready to launch. Your waitlist decays. People get mad. You need to do this like 3 months before you can ship the product. But I think we're going back to 2013, 2014, where the next round of financing is dependent on proving demand. And it's really tough when you're a small company to deal with supply chain and stuff like that.
Yeah.
How did you think about the actual marketing asset? I mean, I remember it being fairly successful. And how did you make it so successful?
So we used an incredible storytelling studio. They called themselves Category Creation. Actually did a lot of work for Slack and a lot of other videos they did the initial Uber dots video that they were running as a TV commercial when Uber rebranded that logo, I guess, I don't know, 2016. And so we used them. They were a small studio in San Francisco. They had they professionally produced TV commercials. We hired them and we paid a lot of money and we negotiated pretty hard and begged and borrowed and steal to get them to take our work. And they kind of nailed the video position and we worked with them and we had our head of marketing and myself worked with them and we nailed it.
So can you kind of work backwards? Like how many pre-orders did you have? How many actual sales did you have? If you're willing to, and then what was the marketing strategy kind of going forward and how did it change?
You think I should know this, but I actually truly don't remember. We ran paid ads against the video took off. We ran paid ads against the video. We kept collecting pre-orders and then we shipped.
Yeah.
And the business took off from there. I don't remember the actual first batch we had to sell. We had a pretty high minimum order quantity. And I think also we weren't selling a gadget. We were selling a product that's a life stage product. I mean, in any given year, there are 4 million births per year in the U.S. Only some of them are going to be your target market. And you have to sit there and maybe people have multiple kids. They have a child every year. So you have a greenfield market that's refreshing itself. But at the end of the day, that's a little harder than selling a gadget where, I don't know, you've got 100 million people you can sell it to. So the ramp was fast. I think it took somewhere between 3 and 6 months to get the product actually out the door from when we thought we were going to do it. And then we ramped and we ran that video asset for, I don't know, probably a year and a half, 2 years before we actually switched to a different marketing message because it fatigued. Everything in marketing fatigues. So yeah.
Siki, what do you got?
The thing I was thinking about, what I would tell me 15, 20 years ago, is marketing is actually a real thing. I think when you're first getting started as a young technical person and you think marketing is make-believe, and you know, you're immune to marketing.
Totally.
But I think in retrospect, a few observations that I, in retrospect, ignored at a time is Apple makes some of the best products in the world and they're better at marketing than anyone. Mm-hmm. And they spend so much time, energy, effort on making sure their keynotes are secure and having those presentations be extremely high production value. You do it for a reason. And I think over time, the thing I've increasingly internalized is marketing is very real. Is incredibly impactful. And if you can deliver great marketing with the same type of effort, concentration, and quality that you put into your product, it works. And you need to do both as a founder.
Are you talking about, so obviously a lot of different types of marketing. There's brand marketing, there's like paid marketing, there's like launch marketing, all those things. Like what specifically can you give like the listeners to be like, this is like, you should really pay attention to this, or even just some war stories.
Well, I think they're all important, right? I think that's like the challenge of doing any startup. You have to like do everything pretty well. And so there is brand marketing, there is performance marketing. There's generally, I think of marketing in the form of things you can attribute direct results to and things are not attributable. So a billboard is very hard to attribute, but it builds like some kind of brand. But you know, if you do a Facebook ad or Google ad, you can directly trace the click. Both are important. I think for founders, or at least like the younger version of me, the advice I would give is as a technical founder, you're tempted to over-index on the things that you can measure in general, whether that's analytics
or
marketing effort or like marketing channels. But I think it is really important to think about and be okay with the channels and the forms of marketing that aren't directly attributable. Narrative and the different channels you can deliver that narrative is generally a lot more difficult to attribute, but it still is critically important. So one real example is, you know, when we launched our website, Runway, about half a year ago, we didn't design it for conversion. And I think that would be like the straightforward thing to do, which is, okay, how many people land on this page? Is going to click through and sign up. And that's like pretty easy to measure and you can optimize against it. You can run A-B tests. But what we optimize for is conversation, is to tell a story. And what is really difficult to measure there, even beforehand, is the amount of conversation people have about your story, right? So even though the conversion rate was okay, what was difficult to measure when it happened is people started talking about the story and the website, and it got like millions and millions of views because these conversations were happening because the story was new. And so that level of thinking about things beyond what you can measure, I think generally I wouldn't have done 15, 20 years ago.
Right.
But it is one of the most important things you can get right in good marketing is this narrative and the story itself, and it's not directly measurable.
Yeah, I know we're running up on time, and we all have busy schedules. I'll kind of like wrap it up on I don't know, somebody's pinging here. Whoever is, mute your mic if you can. I'll kind of wrap this up on, I completely agree with you, Siki, as far as like, so like, I skew to the technical and product side of things and really thought like product sales and marketing were kind of like somebody else's job. But like as the founder and also the CEO, and also those are two different roles as well. But like as you really become the CEO, I think that you really need to understand all of these different levers. And I've now been in like the venture startup game for a decade now. And I'm only now getting into more of the marketing side of things. So over the last 2 years, I'd say that I've been getting more into two or three years more into the sales side of things, which I've like really enjoyed a lot. But I think that like, as like a full rounded person, you need to understand like, how are you getting, like if you are, let's talk about, because I'm a B2B company, so I'll see you there. How are you getting actually like your leads? Like how are they coming into you? Like, are they coming direct to you? Which probably is like, they've heard about you some other way. Are they coming directly from an ad? Are they coming from some other source? Are they coming from a partner or whatever? Are they actually converting to an actual marketing qualified lead? Do they convert to a sales qualified lead, which are different definitions? Sales qualified leads, if you do have a sales team, are the ones that actually will be talking to somebody. So if you're typically like, I don't know what the AOV is, but like if you're selling like over $10,000, I would say a year in software, like you're going to be having people to probably talk to people. And just like every company is different, but like really understanding all of that stuff is something that like I never appreciated. And go back to your initial point, Siki, it's just like, oh, like you as a technical co-founder is like, hey, I just shipped this code and like out the door. Like, why isn't this stuff just like going off? And like everybody thinks that it is. So to kind of wrap this episode up kind of close it on, like, I think that as you progress as like, and all three of us have, and second and well, CK, I think you're third or fourth time founder. Or I can't remember what. How many startups you've been involved in now? I think it's three that you've been a founder in, right? I think that like getting your hands deep in everything is like just so important, and you just learn so many other things, even if it is like super uncomfortable, even if it is like you, like Siki, like I'm sure that when you started your career, you did not think that you were going to build Runway, which is a finance specific platform that you've just kind of uncovered, and now you're like, this is really important, and now I really love this. So just kind of like for everybody listening out there, the founders, to like really like go deeper in other areas of your organization, spend more time with those people, try to become as much of an expert but also a handoff.
And I'm
going
to cut Kevin off because we're at time now. So everyone, you can stay to, you can come back next week and listen to Kevin talk about marketing and some wisdom. Please feel free to subscribe to us on all the channels. I have to
Brutal.
Run. Thanks, Kevin. Bye.
See you, buddy. That was a nice ending. All right. Thanks for chatting, everybody, and listening. All right. See you.
All right. For Kevin next week, both.
All right. Bye.
Bye.